passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another Baseball America podcast. I am Carlos Collazo, joined by Matt Eddy and Ben Badler. Today, we have a very special podcast. We released the Dynasty Hot 100, which is our guide to first-year player drafts. It's the second year that we've done this. Really excited to roll it out, although this year's list was a little bit more challenging to put together than last year's for a number of reasons. But Matt, Ben, how's it going? And I guess let's just dive into this.
Hi, Carlos. This one really presented a challenge. You know, last year we had performance data. We had in-person looks by scouts in games that counted. We didn't have any of that this year. So this was, I thought, a really good test of your expertise and Ben's on the international side to really add that layer of information that, you know, it's, as our old slogan goes, it's baseball news you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true, especially on the international side. Like, you know, with the draft picks, a lot of these guys signed over the summer, and we got new information on them from the alternate site, from Instructional League. But, you know, with international players, like, you know, you compare it to, you know, to the list we put out last year. And I think we were, you know, we're much more conservative on most international players this year because, you know, like last year's list came out, you know, those players signed July 2nd, 2019, you know, and a lot of them hadn't really been seen for, you know, or scouted in a competitive environment for a year, two plus years, because these players are agreeing to sign well in advance of the actual signing date. But all right, they signed July 2nd, and then, you know, from, you know, July and August, you know, about half the teams are playing in tricky leagues. So that means they're playing in games, you know, 2 to 4 games a week from July to August. And then some teams start in September, some teams start in October. They have Dominican Instructional League, which is not like U.S. Instructional League. They're, you know, again, they're playing games 2 to 4 times a week from, you know, from September through November. So it's a lot, you know, the teams have a lot more information on players, on their own players at that point. And they just don't have that same level of information on those guys this year. Obviously no tricky league, no instructional league, and players were banned from, you know, being in the academy up until the signing date, basically. So, It definitely skews our list more heavily toward the domestic draft picks this year, just because you want to, you know, maybe you want to, you can speculate on some of the international players a little bit later on. And, you know, if we, you know, do this, you know, a little bit later on, once these players are in the academies, they'll probably move up the list. We'll just have a little bit more confidence on where they're at right now, because a lot can change with these guys at such a young age. But yeah, definitely makes it a different challenge trying to put together the list this year compared to last year.
Yeah, really at every level we just have less information. You mentioned the challenges of the international market. Even the drafted players, they had less of a college season. I guess this is more specific to the college players who you can typically take some more performance data from their college seasons. They only had a few weeks, add that on to no pro seasons. And it's much more challenging this year. Like Ben was kind of mentioning there, we are planning on doing an update to this as we kind of get some more information on these players, particularly the international players. So you guys can look out for that in the future. But Matt, I wanted to kind of ask you about how you kind of view this list and how we feature specific skills for this list differently than we would a traditional prospects list, because this obviously is geared toward fantasy. So what are some of the tweaks we maybe make, or the profiles that we maybe prefer more in a list like this as opposed to a real world prospect list?
Yeah, with this particular version, we were lucky. We were fortunate to have Spencer Torkelson, who is a clear-cut number one prospect. I think he would be in the consideration pretty much in any one of these exercises. I think he's that good. But in general, like in the long term, you're trying to capture playing time from players, position players, who hopefully will bat toward the top of the order with some of the networking effects of a strong unit around them, like the Dodgers, for instance. You want to try to get as many Dodgers as you can now just because the lineup is so strong. So you get bonus runs and bonus RBIs opportunities. And then with the pitchers, you know, the attrition rate being what it is, you're really looking for those standout skills to elevate them toward the top of a rotation or toward the back of a bullpen. You know, there's leagues that have holds. Saves are valuable in pretty much every format. So, I mean, those are kind of the big things we're looking for. If a player projects to have any kind of stolen base acumen, double-digit steals are always helpful, regardless of format. So those are some of the things. Like, in, you know, I don't know how you guys felt, but I had a really hard time where to direct the list after Torkelson, who has that, you know, 30 home run potential. But then where do you go next? Like, if you were having that second pick, what do you think?
Yeah, for me, I think it's probably an easier call for me than you guys, just because I've consistently been the high man on Austin Martin. I really buy into his hit tool. His track record in the SEC really gives me a lot of confidence that it's going to play at the next level. We just have really loud tools on his hit tool, his plate discipline, his approach at the plate. So I'm personally very high on him and have always been high. But I can see people having questions about him. You obviously don't have the power profile that Torkelson carries. You can have questions about defensive positions, which could affect how he plays in a fantasy format. You obviously want your elite hitters to profile at premium defensive positions. That makes them even more valuable. So there's are still some questions with him there. But I think he's got a good chance to give you a really good bat, high average, with some pop and with speed. So I'm high on him, but I can definitely see how it's a little bit trickier after you get Torkelson out of the way. What about you, Ben?
Yeah, I like Austin Martin quite a bit. I mean, he's a really well-rounded, multi-dimensional player who I think has a chance to hit at the top of a lineup. And that's a pretty good Blue Jays lineup that I think he's going to be in the not too far future. So I think that's another bonus in his favor for this. And, I don't know where he's going to play. I think he could play a lot of different positions. He might play shortstop. He might play third base. He might play second base. He might play center field. It just kind of depends on the construction of the Blue Jays lineup when he gets there. I think, you know, I like Bo Bichette, but, you know, they have Jordan Groshans coming up. I think Martin could move faster and get there faster than Groshans, and Groshans is really, he's probably going to be a third baseman, you know, maybe a chance to stay at shortstop, but Groshans can't really go to center field, doesn't have the speed for that, whereas Austin Martin does. You know, there's some throwing accuracy issues, but again, like we were talking about, even, you know, the issue is really in an abbreviated 2020 college season. You know, if he had the opportunity to continue playing the rest of the year, maybe, you know, obviously he moved around there, but you know, it things could have been different for him, obviously, if the season had gone on longer. But yeah, everything you said, Carlos, I agree with. Just a really well-rounded player who can hit and who has a chance to steal a bunch of bases too.
Yeah. And kind of just speaking of the players right after Spencer Torkelson, I'm kind of curious, Matt, how you see maybe the top 10 of this group, or maybe the elite tier of this group. I guess it would be a second tier if you see Torkelson as his own tier. To last year we had a couple of really impressive shortstop prospects in CJ Abrams and Bobby Witt Jr. at the top. And it was much more hitting heavy at the top. Our first pitcher didn't come until 13. That is in part because of a pretty weak college pitching class with the draft last year. But this year we've got a couple pitchers in the top 10. We really don't have any locked in shortstop prospects. If you don't think Martin is going to play shortstop, and if you're more skeptical of some of the international players sticking there as they kind of continue to physically progress, but just how would you compare our 2021 list to our 2020 list in terms of maybe impact talent at the top?
Yeah, I think last year's class was a cut above. This one might offer a little more depth and a little more variety, you said, because you mentioned the pitchers. We didn't have a pitcher until 13 last year when we had Nick Lodolo followed by George Kirby. Whereas this year we have in our top 14, we have, you know, four pitchers, including one who's already reached the majors, Garrett Crochet of the White Sox. So, so I think this one gives you a little bit more variety, excepting the shortstops, as you mentioned. You're not going to find any Abrams or any Witts in this group.
And how do you kind of balance the – obviously, last year we really had no pitchers. Even the first pitchers we talk about, they kind of had more back-of-the-rotation profiles. This year we have a few guys who have middle or front-of-the-rotation upside. There's better peer stuff. We have guys like Max Meyer who might have 270 pitches in his arsenal, Asa Lacy who – backed up a ton of strikeouts from the left side and has pretty loud stuff overall. How do you kind of balance from a dynasty or from a fantasy perspective, balancing the upside of those pitchers and the attrition rate, like you mentioned? Is this a case of maybe capitalizing on some name value and then just using them in the trade market? Or are these some pitchers you would want to invest in for the long term? How do you kind of handle that from a dynasty manager standpoint?
Yeah, I think in the case of Max Meyer and Asa Lacy, who are the top two pitchers on our board this year, I think you can feel a lot better about their major league potential based on the quality of their pitches. You know, we didn't get to see them, you know, make that big junior year leap this year, unfortunately. But everything we've heard from instructs and in our reporting indicates that they are worth the investment. I would never advise anybody to shy away from trading a pitching prospect if you can get lock in some hitting value on your major league roster. That's often a good strategy. But these two are, I would have a much greater deal of much greater confidence in these two than anybody in last year's class.
Yeah, no doubt. No, it'll be interesting to see which kind of pitchers pan out. Obviously, we have a lot of time for a lot of these guys. I think we also have ETAs for these players. If you guys haven't checked out the list, you definitely should. So you can kind of get a feel for when you should expect some of these players to start making the major leagues. But I kind of want to start diving into some specific players, either players you guys are specifically high on, players who were especially difficult to rank. I know one guy who is always difficult to rank, whether that's fantasy, whether that's real life prospects, whether that's draft, whether that's minor leagues, for me is Garrett Mitchell. He's just such a difficult guy to assess. The risk profile he has combined with his pure tool set, it just makes it very complicated. I could see a case for Garrett Mitchell being in the top five on this list because of his speed and his raw power. And I could see a case where you didn't like him in the top 15. You wanted him out of that because there are real questions there. So I guess outside of Mitchell, or if you guys want to touch on Mitchell, who are some polarizing prospects or difficult prospects for you guys to kind of line up here as we went through this process?
Yeah, Mitchell's interesting. Just doing the Brewers list for us this year. He probably has the – I don't know if you disagree, Carlos. He probably has the best just raw tools on this list.
Mm-hmm. I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, top of the scale runner. Obviously, you know, the defense doesn't really matter in this format other than the fact that, you know, he'll stay in center field. But, you know, he does have, you know, pretty big power. It just – the power doesn't show up in games. And it's not that he's – raw. I mean, like, you look at his numbers at UCLA, it's not like, you know, like Zach Daniels is is pretty tooled up too, but like you look at his numbers outside of, like, a very small sample in 2020, and it was, you know, pretty brutal. Garrett Mitchell, you know, was a good college player. It's just that his swing, you know, it's kind of like a choppy, you know, swing to gear toward putting the ball on the ground and taking advantage of his speed and of college defenses. And that's, you know, that can be a winning strategy at the college level, but as you get higher up, that's, it's, you know, you run into some more issues with that. So I think he's trying to, you know, he's been trying to make some adjustments to that swing. You know, like we saw, like Jaren Duran, or it sounds like at least Jaren Duran has kind of made some, you know, some similar adjustments. Another, you know, really speedy, you know, college player who's now trying to hit the ball in the air more. So can he make those adjustments? I don't know. People talk a lot about swing changes, and I just don't think it's that it's not that simple to do, especially for you know, for somebody who's already, you know, has college experience, who's that age already. But you know, it can be done. So you know, if he had, you know, struggled at UCLA, I'd have even more reservations. But it's not like this is some, you know, just tooled up, you know, athlete who doesn't have any baseball skills. He's actually performed. It's just, I think he's going to have to make some adjustments with his swing as he gets going against better pitching.
Yeah, no doubt. He'll remain one of the more fascinating prospects moving forward in whatever sense you're talking about, whether that's fantasy or just real world value. But Matt, were there any guys who you thought were particularly difficult to rank, or maybe just interesting from a lining them up on the board standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the catchers are always, always present a challenge. And there's two very good amateur catchers who we have ranked pretty good on our board here. Both left-handed hitters who could move quickly if they move off of catcher. You know, you could see them in the big leagues on a pretty fast timeline. And those two are Tyler Soderstrom, high school NorCal catcher, who we have in the 11 to 20 range. Like, his aptitude seems to be pretty off the charts offensively. There remains reservations about his ability to catch. And if you're the A's, do you want to wait for his glove to catch up in the minor leagues, or do you want to get his bat into your lineup? That's the question. If you believe that they will, you know, expedite his development because his offense is so loud, you could potentially see him in, you know, 4 years. The other catcher is Austin Wells of the Yankees, who is a very popular dynasty target. You've got, you know, the left-handed power in Yankee Stadium. You know, you could speak more to the defensive questions with him, but he's enticing for a lot of people because of his offensive upside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really seems like in this format, obviously, we talked about the defense isn't quite as important beyond just allowing you to play a premium position. It'll be interesting to see if those two stick. I think the questions with Austin Wells, even going back to his high school days, just the caliber of his arm. He had shown a strong arm at times when he was healthy. He's dealt with some injuries there, and it's been inconsistent since then. He needs work on receiving. But I think the catcher defense is interesting to me just from a real-world perspective, because the gap between the amateur evaluation and the pro results at catcher is probably the widest of any of the positions. It's very difficult to get a sense for. I mean, that position has so much to do with work ethic and want to, in addition to the physical skills and the demands. But no, it is interesting. I think one thing to point out too is the gap between Patrick Bailey in a non-fantasy list and where he lands on this list. We have him fairly low, maybe lower than some people who are less familiar with fantasy. But Matt, can you kind of explain just why Patrick Bailey falls so low on this list relative to catchers who went behind him in the draft?
Yeah, I mean, the thinking with catchers in a dynasty format is that, number one, they don't have a ton of trade value because there is a high level of skepticism that they'll be able to reach the major leagues, be strong enough defensively to stay behind the plate and retain their catcher eligibility, and also hit at a high enough level. Hmm. And if you're in a 15-team league, often it'll be one catcher. So therefore, if you're taking the 15 best catchers in the Major League Baseball, everybody else is on the wire. So generally there is a lot of surplus catching to be gotten at no cost. So rather than sink a draft pick into Patrick Bailey, who in 5 years might be catching 100 games, and he might not, you can just fish on the waiver wire to pick up a comparable player for that spot.
Yep, yeah, no doubt.
You know, Soderstrom, to me, like, you know, of the group of guys, I thought he was the most interesting guy, just hearing our, you know, the reports that we got from scouts who saw him at Instructional League this year. with the A's, it was, I mean, glowing is probably putting it mildly, right? Like, it was, you know, like that's a tough thing, right? Like we were talking about it before, like CJ Abrams, part of the reason we had him so high on our list last year was like, you know, we liked him a lot before the draft, but then he went out to the Arizona League and hit like, you know, 400 and like, you know, over pretty good, you know, not a huge sample, but a, you know, pretty good sample size. Like I do think, you know, especially doing our Gulf Coast League list every year, you know, there's definitely guys who can change their evaluations for, you know, for good, like a CJ Abrams or, you know, like a Keone Cavaco for, you know, the other way after they go out and sign, and you're seeing them, you know, not just against high school pitchers, but, you know, against pro arms swinging wood bats. I think it can make a difference. So, you know, we don't have that this year, but, you know, they did play a decent amount of games at Instructional League, and it sounds like Tyler Soderstrom really, really raked there, you know, hitting and getting on base. And, you know, it's, I am very wary of like high school catchers, but more so, especially like the defensive oriented guy, who was, I think maybe where scouts fall in love with like, oh man, like this guy's like a great catch and throw catcher. Like it's, you know, it's super fun to watch a really agile catcher who can take charge of a game and, you know, 1-9 pop times to, you know, to second in games. And it's fun to watch, but, you know, with Soderstrom, I think, yeah, there's risk of him, you know, maybe moving off the position, but it's kind of like a Will Myers vibe almost with him. I'm not saying they're like the same type of player, but, you know, guys who, you know, were catchers who it's like, well, if he moves off the position, like his bat might just be good enough to, you know, to carry him elsewhere.
Yeah. Another instructs performer who I'm really interested in moving forward is Evan Carter. We have him in the back half of this list, and I think he's the only drafted player who was not on the BA 500 who makes this list. So just the difference in opinion between the Rangers and what we had at draft time in terms of his draft value around the league is going to be really fascinating for me, because Texas clearly liked what they saw in him before the draft. They signed him for $1.25 million, and he performed pretty well in instructs. He's a potential five-tool guy, power speed combo in center field, and just kind of seeing how he performs in pro ball this year will be really interesting to me with Carter, just to see if one, if we missed on him and the Rangers knew something that everyone seemingly didn't know before the draft. So this is a guy who I feel like you might be able to take advantage of in your dynasty leagues just by taking advantage of the instructs information that we have in our scouting reports now on him, because he performed really well. And I was surprised that he walked almost as many times as he struck out against instructs pitching, which in my opinion is really impressive. I know, Matt, you kind of liked Evan Carter based on all the feedback that we had from him. Were there any other guys kind of this mold who maybe have elevated their positions on this list because of information we have, or any other players you want to touch on?
Yeah, one who comes to mind is Cade Cavalli of the Nationals, their first round pick in Oklahoma. Great body, good delivery, wide repertoire. It sounds like he was pretty electric in Instructional League as well, and had the season played out, had he continued to pitch well, he could have been drafted a lot higher than he was. He'd be somebody I'd be looking out for.
Yeah, no doubt. I'll just add on another pitcher, another college arm that I really like. And Matt, you probably might be more familiar with him at this point than I am. It's JT Ginn with the Mets. I mean, before the season, before he got injured, we were talking about him as a potential top 10 pick. When healthy, he's shown a potential 70 fastball and a 70 slider with advanced command. So I really like Ginn as a bounce back candidate once he's healthy. I think the kind of luster of his stock has fallen a bit because of that injury, but I just want to restate that when he's on and he's healthy, he's pretty electric in all phases. I mean, this was a guy who was in similar conversations with Kumar Rocker, Ethan Hankins of the world out of high school. And then he went to college and really proved it in a starting role in the SEC in the one full season that he got. And the command really was more impressive than a lot of people thought. He had some reliever questions coming out of high school because he was a reliever for his high school team for whatever reason, but really showed he had the ability to start at the collegiate level. Now getting that chance in pro ball when healthy is going to be really interesting. But Ben, yeah, unless you have
agree. I'm sorry. He's just to piggyback on that, you know, he's a potential three pitch right-hander with like incredible work ethic and kind of a mean streak. So I also harbor high expectations for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The two guys for me who I probably like a little bit more than where they are. I mean, they're, you know, not low on the list by any means, but like, you know, Pete Crow Armstrong is one guy where, you know, like, I don't know, like, you know, oh, well, I kind of do know Carlos, but like, you know, like there's this like group of high school outfielders in that class that are just like, you know, really good between Zach Veen, Robert Hassel, Austin Hendrick, and Pete Crow Armstrong. And like, you know, going into the draft, it seems like, you know, the debate was like, oh, like, I wonder who's going to go first. Like, is it going to be Hendrick or is it going to be Zach Veen or is it going to be Robert Hassel? And then Pete Crow Armstrong kind of seems like he was like being considered just kind of like just on the outskirts of there. But to me, I like him just as much, if not more than some of those guys. I think he belongs in that group. I think he's, you know, obviously an elite, you know, defensive center fielder. Obviously the defense doesn't matter so much in this format, but like, you know, the first time I saw him, what I really liked about him was just his bat. I thought he had a pretty good, you know, feel for the barrel, for hitting to all fields. I you know, and with his, you know, plus speed, I think he's got the, you know, a profile to be a, you know, a table setter, top of the order type guy who can hit and who can steal a bunch of bases. And then Ed Howard, I like too, another guy where, you know, we talk a lot about his, you know, his defense at shortstop, but I actually liked his actions in the batter's box. Now maybe some more, you know, risk, just, you know, with less track record on him offensively, but I actually saw some, you know, some attributes there for him to, you know, develop into a pretty good hitter. Obviously the pandemic makes it, you know, a trickier evaluation than usual, but those are two of the high school guys who I probably like more than a little bit more than most guys. Mm.
Yeah, Pete Crow Armstrong is fun too, because if you're a risk-averse drafter, I think he's the safest high school player that we have on this list. I think he's the only high school player we have with a very high risk rather than extreme. So if that's kind of your MO in drafts, he would be an interesting way for you to kind of stick around with the high school players. I do think his supplemental tools and just his instincts and overall polish give him a pretty high floor. Next, I kind of wanted to turn to the international class, Ben, and there's obviously no one better suited to talk about these players than you. Last year, it seems like we had maybe a little bit better impact at the top of this list with Jason Dominguez getting in the top five. Obviously, his tools are otherworldly. How do you view this international class this year? There's obviously a couple shortstops at the top who are the most interesting, but what's your kind of sense of where that group is now, and how do you like them moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, like, we just don't know yet. And that's partly because, like, the teams themselves who, like, are signing these players don't fully know yet in a lot of cases. Like, you know, the teams have been, you know, at this point, they've had them, you know, some clubs have had these players, their signings in their academy for a little bit. And, you know, but they're not, like, playing games yet. They're just kind of, like, getting them acclimated to a pro routine and, you know, getting them fed and strength and conditioning kind of stuff, like, you know, orientation basically type stuff for the most part, you know, and they may have been going out to, you know, if kid is in San Pedro, like, you know, like I'm sure, you know, clubs, you know, they've been going out to like a field where, you know, where a kid trains to see him, but it's, you know, you're just getting a sense for like, you know, his BP swing, which is not necessarily the same as a game swing, you know, that kind of stuff. So like, you know, even some of the, you know, just like the raw tools, like, you know, how hard does a guy, not that we're, you know, drafting pitchers really in this format at 16, 17 years old, but like, you know, how hard does a guy throw right now? Like teams a lot of times just don't know, or what is a guy's run grade? Like, you know, like Hedberg Perez is a good example of a guy who like early on was, you know, running, you know, like a 7.5 or so in the 60, and then, you know, has, you know, improved his run grade over time, you know, 2-3 full grades. So so it's tricky. Obviously, look, there were some guys like, you know, Christian Hernandez is an obvious guy. Like him and Carlos Colmenares are two guys who, you know, really stood out from a young age, and, you know, the reports on them continue to be really strong, but you know, and there's some other guys who I think you can see kind of you know, separate themselves that, you know, we feel more confident in. But, you know, the reality is just like, you know, look, I love the international players, and you know, it's just different than it was last year. I think at this point you're just speculating more on them at this point until we get you know, better real reports on where these guys are at right now.
Matt, from your perspective, how would you kind of handle the risks and the overall uncertainty of the international class if you were going through a draft?
Yeah, I think the players who rise to the highest ceiling level, you know, you might, if you throw a dart at one of those guys, you might hit a Wander Franco or Julio Rodriguez. I think the ceiling has to be high enough to justify drafting them in, you know, like 5 to 8 round types of drafts. Mm-hmm. Obviously, deeper formats, you can be a little more liberal with those picks. But in what we're seeing is that the top 3 shortstops in this year's class are really well liked by dynasty drafters. That would be Christian Hernandez, Wilman Diaz, Carlos Colmenares.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take some time right now to go to a quick break. After that, we'll be back to talk about some more players and the list. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, everybody. Still a few things to get through here. We have not touched on high school pitching at all. That is a very risky demographic in the draft. It's also a risky demographic for fantasy purposes. It's a lot of projecting, a lot of patience necessary, but the upside could be pretty big. Let's jump into the high school pitching class. I guess, Ben, what are your thoughts in general on the high school arms we have on this list? Are there any that you're really excited by? Are there any you like more than where we have them ranked? I guess Mick Abel would be the top guy. I personally love him. Just curious, what do you think about the overall class of the high school arms we have here?
Yeah, I would say in general, I see a lot of guys who I would avoid. Guys with some red flag. I mean, you know, we've seen Tyler Kolick and Riley Pint and Cole Stewart, and you know, like you have, oh, you know, Markup, you know, there's guys who can, you know, not, you know, develop into you know, good players who are you know, at all types of demographics, but obviously high school pitching is a particularly risky one. So there's certainly some guys who I would steer clear of. But like that said, you know, if you're going to draw up a high school pitcher, like Mick Abel has just about everything you would try to check off for a high school pitcher. It seems like just really good size, fastball, feel for his secondary stuff, mechanics, pretty good control. It sounds like for his age. So, you know, if you're going to take a high school pitcher, you know, that would be the guy I would bet on, but I would, you know, I would think he'll probably go earlier than I would be comfortable taking him. So, you know, there are a couple guys later on, I think, who I like if you know, if they're available deeper into the draft. Mason Wynn with the Cardinals, you know, a two-way player. I like him a lot. And Alex Santos, I think, has a lot of good traits to be a starter. The Astros have been, you know, squeezing extra velocity out of just about all of their pitchers, and I think he has really good projection indicators for him to do that as he gets stronger and the attributes to remain a starter. So as much risk as I see in you know, high school right-handed pitching, especially, those are, you know, after Abel, those are two guys who you know, if I was going to, you know, roll the dice on a little bit later, who I'd like to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other top right-handed pitcher in this past class from the high school demographic is Jared Kelly, and I think he is kind of that red flag now that you think of when you think of high school arms who have busted. You mentioned a couple of the names, and he's going to be interesting for me to watch because he did throw really hard as an amateur. He did not have great feel for spin. I think those would be two immediate kind of red flags that pop up at you, and you kind of wonder how they're going to pan out moving forward. But what I always come back to with Kelly, and maybe this is just me not seeing those previous guys that you mentioned in person like I did with Kelly, but the ease with which he got to his velocity and how advanced his command was, how great feel he had for his changeup at a young age, really makes me wonder if he can kind of be the exception to this rule. I'm sure everyone who's ever drafted a high school righty who throws really hard thinks that of the player they took, that he's going to be the outlier or the exception. So he's going to be an interesting one to follow. And while we only have a couple high school pitchers on this list because of the risk that comes with it, we do have one high school left-hander who's interesting in Kyle Harrison. Matt, I think this is a guy that you've previously have liked, or maybe just been really encouraged by the reporting that we got over the summer. How would you kind of assess Harrison and maybe the differences between left-handers and right-handers from that demographic?
Yeah, Harrison is the one I would target if I were looking for a high school pitcher. You could probably get him later. That's one advantage of taking him. If you have extra picks, you know, if you traded for some extra picks and you want to take a shot on somebody, he'd be the one. You know, and for whatever reason, we have found that high school left-handers tend to be better bets than right-handers. It's hard to pinpoint exactly why. They tend to develop faster, be less injury prone, and more successful relative to draft position than right-handed counterparts. We have seen some successes of late, like Mike Soroka, Jack Flaherty. Some of these high school right-handers have kind of defied and beaten the odds. But for the most part, you know, if you were going to throw a dart at a high school pitcher, it'd probably be a left-hander. And Harrison would be a good one based on his starter traits, breaking ball, velocity uptick.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think we actually mentioned all the high school pitchers that we had on this list. So with that put to bed, I think it would be kind of fun to talk through some maybe sleepers in the back half of the list, or just guys that you personally like and would maybe vouch for players who are getting deeper into their drafts and maybe don't really know what direction they want to head. Any players that you guys would want to point to or make a case for, or maybe just even talk about in the 50 to 100 range? Ben, I guess you can kick it off.
Yeah, I really like the Angels drafting David Calabrese. You know, super young for his class, and I think that's a point in his favor. Elite runner in center field, and I think he's, you know, got the skills to, you know, to make contact at a pretty good rate. I don't think he's ever going to hit for much power. Now, you know, look, we can be surprised by that sometimes. Where I look at his frame, not just that he's not that tall, but just the kind of the way he's built, I don't expect him to hit for a lot of power. But you know, guys who make a lot of contact sometimes kind of defy those odds, and some of it obviously depends on what baseballs are using and all that. But you know, I see a center fielder who I think has a chance to hit and really high level impact type speed, even if it's, you know, it's not going to be big power, but the ability to play a premium position to hit and the speed he has, along with being one of the younger players in the class. You know, I really like that pick by the Angels where they got him. I think he's got a chance to offer a lot of value too in this format.
Yeah. So if your type is speedy high school hitters with good hit tools, I guess my type for this conversation is injured players, because the guy I wanted to point to is Freddie Zamora, the shortstop out of Miami that the Brewers drafted. They gave him just over $1 million. But he's interesting to me for a number of reasons. One, because the shortstop class this year isn't great. But I do like the upside that Zamora offers. I think he's got a chance to be a plus defender at the position. So maybe he'll be locked in there to give you value of being a shortstop. But he had a pretty good bat at Miami when he was healthy. He didn't get to play any in the 2020 season. But I really think he has kind of solid average tools across the board after his defense, which I think has a chance to be plus. If he can give you a solid average, good approach at the plate, a little bit of speed, a little bit of pop, I feel like that kind of all-around tool set as a shortstop could wind up being pretty valuable. And I think he is a guy who, again, if he didn't get hurt, he had a chance to go in the first round. So I think kind of where his stock is generally with people is a little bit lower than I think his overall tool set and college projection should have him. So he would be a guy that I would look out for in this range.
Yeah, you talk about like the ultimate like wild card X factor, you know, lack of information on players. Like at least the other guys, you know, we're talking about like the college players either played a little bit of college this year or college baseball in 2020 or played some, you know, alternate site instructional league. Like he had his whole season wiped out and he finished his rehab like right at the end of instructional leagues. So like, yeah, definitely banking on, like you said, you know, mm-hmm. being a pretty good player in 2019, and then just, you know, hoping for some value there where he, you know, just nobody got a chance to see him last mm-hmm. year.
Yeah. Matt, is there any guy that maybe jumps out to you or that you want to touch on in this range?
Yeah. For me, I would single out Clayton Beter, the right-hander drafted by the Dodgers out of Texas Tech, second round supplemental. We were talking off air a little bit. He's got some of those pitch attributes the teams really love now. Fastball with ride and the high curveball he can locate down. And he seemed to make strides in his strike throwing ability. He's always had swing and miss stuff. I think if he picks up a third pitch, I think he's in the right organization to maximize his development. I think he could be a lot better than like these pre-draft rankings would indicate.
Yeah, I think that last point you mentioned is a good one to maybe sign off here. How much stock do you personally put into farm systems and just organizations' track of development, and how much do you think people generally should for these sorts of drafts?
Me personally, quite a bit. I think there's, when you have a track record like the Dodgers have, I think that counts for a lot when we're talking about developing 18 to 22 year olds into major leaguers.
Awesome. Well, guys, unless you have any parting thoughts or any comments you want to make before we get out of here, I think this was a pretty fun way to kind of break down the list and maybe give some people a little bit more information on these first year players for fantasy purposes. Again, if you guys have not checked out the list, be sure to check that out. It's at baseballamerica.com right now. We're going to have an update at some point in the future to give you even more up-to-date information and maybe some more clarity on a few of these players who have a bit more question marks than they would in a typical year. But for Matt and for Ben, I'm Carlos. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next time.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.